everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's March 2019, and you're listening to episode 113, Is AI Taking Over? On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Charles E. White, who is professor of Christian thought and history at Spring Arbor University in Michigan. He has degrees from Harvard, Gordon Conwell, and Boston University. Dr. White wrote a philosophical apologetics article for our journal, and it's called, Who's Afraid of Hell? Why Computers Will Not Become Conscious and Take Over the World. And it's free online at our website, bequip.org. Chuck, it's good to have you on.
It's fun to be here.
Well, AI is kind of in vogue right now, and I think one of the most recent cultural mentions of AI was a couple of years ago. Bill Gates told people on social media that if he was studying computer science today, he would for sure make his emphasis in AI. And so all of us probably have interaction with AI and we don't even realize it. I think one of the ones that I don't like the most is going onto any kind of company's website. And if I'm having issues and I click on customer service, sometimes it'll say, hey, would you like to chat? And that's not a real person. That's an automated bot that is, you know, an AI program that's kind of learning just all the typical questions that people ask for customer service. So those are just some more pop culture references. And of course, you know, in our article when we published it, we had, you know, the 2001 Space Odyssey HAL computer. But what is AI? Why don't you explain that to our listeners?
Well, artificial intelligence is the ability of computers to do a number of things that require intelligence to accomplish. Computers can play games. They can predict the weather. They can read x-rays better than a lot of radiologists can. They can analyze huge amounts of data. They can recognize faces. They can even learn. And so a lot of people think that because of these things that machines can think. And so artificial intelligence is the ability for them to do things that at least in people require intelligence to do.
So what's scary about artificial intelligence? I think a lot of people, you know, mainly because of maybe pop culture and movies, we see like robots being so human. I think of actually the Steven Spielberg film, AI, where that was a really well done film in that it made you feel empathy for what was supposedly a robot. And so I think people are fearing the thought of artificial intelligence and maybe that robots someday will have consciousness.
Well, it's an old fear. I mean, it's, you think back to Mary Shelley's novel about Frankenstein, where the doctor makes a creation and then the thing turns into a monster. Or you think about even the Walt Disney Fantasia episode about the Sorcerer's Apprentice, where the little apprentice is trying to figure out how to haul the water. And so then he enchants the broom and then the thing takes over and starts a flood. The idea is that something that we're supposed to control then somehow gets out of control and starts being dangerous to us. So that's an old, old fear. And as you said in the movie Space Odyssey, HAL, the computer, takes over the ship, murders one of the crew, and then attempts to kill all the others. So the fear that something's supposed to serve us, that it becomes our master. And especially when it's not human. And that I think that makes it particularly scary to a lot of people. Now, in the realistic part of this, and you talk people like Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking and Elon Musk have worried that computers somehow could become conscious and that they could. So much of our world, of course, depends on computers, you know, from power systems to all the financial markets to communications. And, you know, there's lots of things that we don't even know that you know, depend on computers to run correctly. And so if somehow the computers all got together, they could either enslave the human race, or some people talk about, you know, they can even eliminate the human race. And so that's, I think that's what scares people. The idea that something that, that we make is going to turn on us and kill us. You know, that's very frightening.
In your article, you say at the beginning, as you're introducing this topic, that, you know, we don't have to fear what computers themselves can do. And you give us some historical context with regards to computer science and mathematical discoveries. And I would just say to our listeners is a lot of times people don't realize what a grounding in computer science there is with regard to math. And I say this as someone who's an English major, but has a son that just graduated from college with a degree in computer science, is that it is so much math that he was only one class away from a math minor. So it's very much grounded in a lot of mathematics in terms of computer programming. So just kind of give us some of the background, the historical background that relates to math and implications for computer science.
Well, I think there are really two answers. The first answer is a philosophical answer, and then I'll give you the math answer. I don't think computers can ever develop a thinking mind. Now, this question is really a hot one in the area of thought called philosophy of mind. Philosophers, normal philosophers, think about how people think about things, but super philosophers think about how people think. And that's, I call philosophers of mind the super philosophers because they get down to this basic issue of how they think about how can we think about anything at all. And a lot of those guys are materialists. And so they think that there's nothing except energy, matter, time, and space. And so their problem is to figure out what ideas are, because ideas are not energy, matter, time, and space. A friend of mine was talking to a mathematician who was a materialist. And he said to him, "So what do you study?" And of course, you know, if he only believes in energy, matter, time, and space, then when he does math, what is he studying? And that was an unanswerable question. So the problem for the materialist is to think about what am I doing when I'm thinking? And most of them don't know, but they're still working on it. And so I think that they're not going to come up with the answer to that, because I'm a dualist. I think that materialism, you know, describes part of the universe, but there's a spiritual part of the universe. And of course, as a Christian, I know there's a spiritual part of the universe, and ideas are part of that spiritual part. So ideas are real. And so thinking is participating in the mind of God in the Logos, which of course John says that's what Jesus is in John 1. So we can trust our minds. We can trust that there's such a thing as thinking. We can trust there's such a thing as reason. And so that's a non-material aspect to reality, and it instantiates itself through material things like our brains. Just like you can't have an idea without communicating it, without writing it down or somehow, you know, giving it a material expression. But so the first reason I'm not afraid of computers is because they won't be able to think, because thinking involves being part of that non-material world, and they just can't do that. So that's one. But if you're not a Christian and you're a materialist, then you don't accept that. So here comes the second reason that'll work with a materialist. And that second reason is Kurt Gödel. And Kurt Gödel has a thing called the incompleteness theorem. And he set out to answer the question, is mathematics consistent and complete and decidable? And what happened is that mathematicians were trying to figure out, how do we know whether math is true or not? You think, what do you mean, how do you know whether math is true? You got two apples and another guy gives you two apples. You got four apples. Of course, math is true. Or you try to figure out, how big a steel beam do you need to build a bridge? And so that all works. But around the turn of the 20th century, people were saying, well, yeah, but how do we know these just aren't rules of thumb? How do we know they really work? How do we know they're mathematically grounded? And Kurt Gödel was working on that, and he figured out that mathematics is incomplete. And what he means by that is that there always exists true mathematical statements that no system will be able to prove. Now, how Gödel proved that is something, it's too complicated for me to explain because I don't really understand it. But it is unmistakably true. And people say, you know, that that's as important as Newton, what Newton discovered or what Einstein discovered or what Heisenberg discovered. And so Gödel's incompleteness theory is just, you know, it's accepted by all mathematicians. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean by incompleteness. He means that for every mathematical system, there is at least one statement that given that mathematical system, you cannot determine whether it's true or false. And it's something that somebody looking at it from the outside can figure it out, but within the system, you can't figure it out. So for instance, let's say you have a mathematical system and you have odd and even numbers, and you have the operation of addition and subtraction. And then my challenge to you is try to prove that no three odd numbers add up to 20. Now, we all know that's true. You can't take three odd numbers and have them add up to 20. But within that system, you can't prove that. You can't show that. So you have to go outside the system and get number theory, which will say that an odd number of odd numbers is always an odd number. And then you can solve it, but you've had to add something to it. What Gödel shows us is that no matter how many things you add to that system, it's always going to be incomplete. There's always going to be something that the system can't prove, but that an outside observer knows is true. Now, the implication of this for computers was figured out, first of all, by Alan Turing. And remember, Alan Turing was the father of artificial intelligence, and he was also famous that he was one of the guys who broke the Enigma code. And so that the Allies...
Yeah, in World War II.
Yeah, in World War II, the Allies knew a lot of what the Germans were going to do because the Germans thought their code was unbreakable. So anyhow, Turing figured out that once a human being understands a computer program, then the human can always outthink the computer. He showed that even with what he called, what other people called a Turing machine, which would be an infinite computer running at infinite speed, there are some problems that people can solve, but computers can't. So for instance, that problem of the three odd numbers adding up to 20, if you have a computer that just has, once again, you give it addition and subtraction, odd and even numbers, the thing will run forever combining three numbers and seeing if it comes out to 20. And since there's an infinite supply of numbers, the thing will run infinitely and never get to 20. So it can't answer that question. Now, you say, well, duh, just let the computer just add fractions or just add number theory. And then, of course, you know, the problem can be solved. But what Turing said is no matter how many steps you go through, how many times you add new elements, somebody is going to be able to see things from outside, and it's always be able to outthink the computer. So finally, there's an Oxford philosopher named John Lucas, who's a philosopher of mind. And he realized that if some problems will stump computers, but they won't stump people, then so-called computer thinking must be really different from what goes on in the human mind. And so then he said that you can't, therefore you can't reduce mind to brain, that your brain and your mind are really different things. And the whole fear of artificial intelligence is that computers are going to develop minds of their own and wills of their own, and that they're going to do things that we don't want them to do.
You're listening to the Postmodern Really podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Charles E. White, and he wrote an article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called "Who's Afraid of Hal? Why Computers Will Not Become Conscious and Take Over the World, and it's available free online at our website, equip.org. To read more philosophical apologetics articles like this one, please subscribe to our journal. A subscription is $33.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. You were just talking about computers not being able to be conscious and also using math to show that they will not be able to become, you know, thinking. And so what are some of the problems besides the one that you talked about, the odd numbers up to 20?
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. For instance, ask a computer what the sum of the series 1 minus 1/3 plus 1/5 minus 1/7 plus 1/9 minus 1/11 and so on is. And it will never be able to figure that out because it's an infinite series. So it'll just keep working on it forever. Now, any smart high school kid knows that the answer is pi over 4. And the reason that kids can do it, or, you know, a smart high school kid can do it, is that she or he will be able to bring geometry into the problem. And that's where you get pi, is from geometry. And the computer would see it simply as an arithmetic problem. But the person can think outside the box and realize that geometry can solve what arithmetic can't. It's that outside-the-box thinking that computers can't do. And even if you have neural networks and even if you teach computers things, they can't make those imaginative leaps. They can only do things that people have told them to do. They can't think of new things to do that nobody thought of.
So you just talked about, you know, high school kids could be able to think outside the box and use geometry, for example, to solve that problem. And so why can't computers be creative? Why can't they think outside the box? I mean, I guess we could program them, but could they keep running those programs to learn how to think outside the box?
Well, computers can learn. For instance, there are a number of games like Go or Pac-Man or things like games that kids play that you can give it to a computer, and the computer can through just, you know, millions of iterations figure out whether it's done what it's supposed to do or not, without even telling the computer what the rules are of the game. You tell the computer what it can do, and then you tell the computer how to know whether it's won or not, and then the computer will work on that and actually learn the rules of the game. Or like back in the 70s, there was a computer program called Butterfly, where what you do is you tell the computer. You say to the computer, what am I thinking about? And the computer will say, is it a butterfly? And if you say no, then the computer says, tell me what you're thinking about. And you say, I'm thinking about a rock. And then the computer says, how is a rock different from a butterfly? And you say, a rock can't fly. And so then the next time you play the game, the computer says, you say, I'm thinking of something. And the computer says, can it fly? And if you say no, then the computer says, is it a rock? And then if you say no, then, you know, tell me what it is. How's it different from a rock? And it builds these series of questions. And so it can learn. But see, that's not creativity. That's just organizing data that you've already given to the computer into a decision tree. So that's, and you can call that learning if you want to, but it's not really. And I think a lot of the times that when people talk about intelligence, for instance, in your journal, you had me review a book called Life Point 3 about an intelligent artificial intelligence that a guy named Max Tegmark wrote. And he says he defined intelligence as the ability to achieve goals. Well, that to me seems to be, and then so he says that, well, computers can do that. Well, it seems to me that, that's really setting the bar really low, because there's a lot, he says, there's a lot more to intelligence than just the ability to achieve goals. And so computers can learn, but they can't be creative. They can't do that outside the box thinking. They don't associate things the way we do, like play, you know, do word association, and think of answers that way. So those are some of the ways that computers are different from people and the way people think.
So I guess we don't really have to fear what computers can do to us, although I know that humans can attach themselves to computers. Like if you give, like say, senior citizens and program a computer to be a companion, they can attach emotional feelings to that. But I don't think the computer itself, even if it's shaped like a human being, could reciprocate. Or maybe we could program it to do certain things. But we shouldn't fear suddenly that computers would replace people in relationships, for example.
No, exactly. Now, Tegmark, in his book, talks, he has both utopian and dystopian futures based on artificial intelligence. And he actually, because as I said, he set the bar so low, thinks that computers actually can think. And he's afraid, he says, well, we might get computers that will be as smart as human beings. And so then they can program as well as we can. And then those computers that they make will be smarter than human beings. So they'll be able to program better than any human being can. So they'll be able to make supercomputers. And he sees this exponential explosion of computer power that'll make computers far smarter than human beings.
But does he say that they would be conscious, that they would achieve consciousness through that?
Well, he says that that's the hardest problem of all, because nobody knows what consciousness is. And so he says there's a hard problem, there's a harder problem, and the hardest problem. And the hardest problem is defining what consciousness is. So he really lets that one go. And I don't think we really have to worry about that. It's just a malevolent outcome. Whether the thing is conscious or not, if it kills all of us, we're still all dead. So I'm consciousness isn't the issue. The issue is, will the computers be able to do things that we haven't told them to do? And at least, you know, from what I know about mind and from what Kurt Gödel has shown, computers will never be able to do things that we haven't told them to do.
So there always has to be a human being. I guess that, you know, in sci-fi people, you think of like the Matrix or anything else that's some kind of, well, those are like aliens, but, you know, things come, or computers like somehow band together, and together they try to rid themselves of humanity. Like we couldn't, through our programs, I guess that's what people are wondering.
Yeah.
Could computers somehow connect to one another and realize that human beings are not worth, you know, existing, and somehow rise up and exterminate everyone?
Right. That that is the fear. My point is that the computers can't do that themselves, but conceivably one person who controlled computers could do that and could wipe out the whole human race. So Max, for instance, Max Tegmark in his book, well, he's more afraid of a nuclear holocaust. He says the chances that human beings in the next 10,000 years are going to wipe themselves out with nuclear weapons is 99.99995% or something like that. But he's, you know, he still smiles at us from the pages, you know, from the back cover of his book, and has hope. And you know, as Christians, we realize that that's not what's going to happen. We may have a realistic reason for not being afraid of computers, but one person with a computer could wipe out the whole human race. And that's something to, you know, that if you don't have the Lord and you don't have any hope in him, you don't know, you haven't read the last chapter of the book and know how it's going to end, you should be very afraid of. But then again, I mean, there's a lot of other things to be afraid of. There's, There's supposed to be a volcanic explosion in the around the Rockies that's 100,000 years overdue, that's going to wipe out everything, you know, east of the Mississippi. And was it 2005 when an asteroid flew between the Earth and the Moon, and if it hit us, you know, would have wiped us out the way that the dinosaurs got wiped out? I mean, there's if you want things to worry about, and worrying about computers is right up there, but there's a lot more other ways that we could all die without the computers getting us. Now, isn't that a happy thing to think about?
Yeah, this seems like very doom and gloom. I don't want to leave everybody just being really depressed that they could be wiped out by some, you know, malevolent person controlling an army of computers. But does the fact that people, human beings, that we can think and computers can't think, does that have any other implications beyond, you know, the field of artificial intelligence?
Well, there we get back to to my first reason not to be afraid of the computers, because there's such a thing as mind. And like Gödel said, and Alan Turing said, that human beings can always outthink computers. If they understand the program, the human mind can always figure out something that the system can't. And that argues for the reality of the human mind. It argues for that materialism is wrong. The materialism that just says that, well, like, remember Bertrand Russell said that our thoughts are just the accidental collocation of atoms. You know, atoms banging together in your head make you think of things, and that's all random. And so the ideas just pop up into your brain randomly because of the way the cosmic rays hit your head, or the way the atoms bang around in there, or some kind of chemical reaction. But we can know that there is something other than material. And Gödel's shown that, and Turing and Lucas have figured that out, even without a Christian perspective. And of course, the Bible tells us that there's a spiritual realm. And so from science, we can know that there is such a thing as mind, and that there is a spiritual dimension to reality, that there's a non-material aspect of the universe. Even Daniel Dennett, the atheist philosopher, one of the new, you know, great four horsemen, you know, the eighth of the apocalypse, the kind of the one of the new atheists, I heard him on a podcast recently talking about that it's undeniable that there's such a thing as information. Well, if you believe that there's such a thing as information, then you can't be a materialist, because information is immaterial. And you cannot just argue then that there's nothing but energy, matter, time, and space. And so once you put materialism aside, then that opens the door for a non-material reality. And of course, we know there's a non-material reality. It's called God. And so the implications of Gödel are that there's a spiritual realm, and that we can know something about that spiritual realm. I recently went to the Ukraine and gave a talk about Kurt Gödel, and finished it by talking about the spiritual implications of it, to show that materialism is wrong. Now, the poor people in the Ukraine, you know, had been imprisoned for decades by dialectical materialism, by Marxism, which has a materialistic base. And from science, we know that Marx was wrong, and materialism is wrong, and there is a spiritual dimension to reality. And that's good news.
Well, this has given us a lot of food for thought. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Chuck. And it's been a cold winter, and about a month or so ago, it was colder in your neck of the woods than, you know, really cold, like I think it was Mount Everest or something like that. So when it's really cold like that.
You told me it was colder in Michigan than it is in Antarctica. And I said, well, yeah, because it's winter in Michigan and summer in Antarctica.
There you go. And so when it's really cold like that, do you prefer coffee, hot tea, or hot chocolate?
I only drink cocoa. I love to go running out in the cold. Later today, when it's going to be 18 below, I'm going to go out and run for a couple of miles. It's going to be really fun. And cocoa is really fun to drink after that.
Are you an introvert or an extrovert?
Oh, I'm a super extrovert. The more the merrier.
I think you're the first person that said that. Most authors I've talked to have said that they're introverts. Would you rather have jury duty or do your own taxes?
Oh, I can't do my own taxes. I mean, I like to write about math and think about math, but trying to figure out the government regulations are crazy. And I'd love to have the power to be on a jury and figure out who did the right thing and who didn't. I've never been. My wife has been on jury duty, and she hung the jury. She knew the person was guilty, and everybody else was fooled by the defense people and hung the jury. But then they got her on they got the convict the next time.
Wow, that's very interesting. Well, maybe someday you'll actually get called up for jury duty. Thanks for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
It's been really fun. Thank you.
Today's guest is Dr. Charles E. White, and he wrote a philosophical apologetics article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called Who's Afraid of Hell? Why Computers Will Not Become Conscious and Take Over the World. And it's free online at our website, equip.org. To read more philosophical apologetics articles, please subscribe to the journal. A subscription is $33.50, and to subscribe online, go to our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.